unwarranted music opinion. Unwarranted music opinion. I don't care if you don't want to hear my opinion about your robot. Welcome back to Unwarranted Music Opinions. I'm Jacob Lindberg. I'm here with Brian Courtney.
Hello.
And Chaz Jenkins.
Hello, everybody.
And if you can tell from the lack of my refrigerator humming along in the background, we have a little bit of an upgrade recording here.
We got a budget.
You know, we're all going to miss that fridge, but it lives on in our hearts.
Especially Jacob's, because he lives there.
And it's where his food is kept.
Today's an unthemed episode. We're going to be talking about just three albums that we've chosen, three albums that we may or may not enjoy, three albums that may or may not be totally in or out of our wheelhouse. And I think we're going to start today with Brian's pick.
What's that? Wanna go back to sleep?
We're going to talk about Kiro Kiro Bonito's 2017 album, Bonito Generation. They're a British indie group from out of London. Lead vocalist is Sarah Midori Perry. Ethnically Japanese, was raised in London, England.
For those of you who want a visual representation, Jacob is leaning over from the mic, sipping his coffee, trying so hard to make any noise.
I know
he's looking dead at me when he does it.
You're trying to be quiet, but like, you can just, well, it's not hot anymore.
All right, you want me to do a little bit of...
I have the same coffee you do.
Brian, please continue.
This is their debut album. They had some songs that were gone before. I think Dope Beat was one of them. And the ever-popular Flamingo, the shrimp song, if you've ever heard that, was popular as a music meme on the internet for some time.
Yeah, I've never heard of this band before. This is like...
I mean, they're very recent. They're a synth-pop group, at least on this album, making very, very cheery, upbeat, like, intoxicatingly happy music.
It's twee-pop in spirit, for sure.
Pretty much undeniably joyful. I've heard this album a million times. I love... basically every cut on this album. I have very few issues with it, so I just want to throw it to one of you. I'm actually going to throw it to Chaz, because I knew you'd probably like this, Jacob, but I was curious as to what Chaz would think, because I didn't think Chaz would love it, but...
Brian, what is this?
It's great.
All right, let me get right off the bat, like, I did enjoy this album.
Okay.
And at first, when I was listening to it, I was like, I can't tell if I hate this or love this. Because as I'm listening to it, like, wow, these beats are catchy. Her delivery is hilarious. The best moments on the album is everyone she would just talk, and her, I guess, partner or band member would just come and be like, yes, like, in the most dull delivery possible. It's so funny.
It's one of the producers, Gus Loban and Jamie Bold. She talks to Gus on a break.
What do you
think?
I agree. Mm. I think what I love most about this album is I'm a sucker for overly happy music with depressing undertones. The one about education?
Graduation.
Graduation. How she's like, I didn't learn anything anyway. I was like, ooh, there's some deep meaning behind that. I really enjoyed that. And, you know, I found myself just humming along to each song. There's never a moment where I was like, ugh, I didn't care for that. And the B work is, like, we're going to be talking a lot about B work, especially when we get to Jacob's album, but... every time the drums would kick in with that classic do-da-da-do-da-da-da, I was like, yeah,
yeah,
give it to me.
Yeah,
give it to me.
It's really instantaneously catchy. I think some of the drum machines sound like some of them sound like completely untouched, like the claps on.
Very clean production.
There's
very
one song where production. The clap, you know, the clap effect, it sounds completely undoctored. That's like straight out of Fruity Loops. Like,
I would compare the drumming and the production on this thing. It's very close to like 80s synth pop. I got a lot of like... Human League out of the drumming on this, but it, like Duran Duran.
But it has a more modern twist on it, because a lot of these beat works you could hear.
It doesn't sound like throwback.
There's a little bit of trap influence, especially on the Graduation.
But it's a good blend. It's a good blend. I think I don't really have an issue with it. I've never heard anything like this before. Brian, you keep throwing curveballs at me.
It's a pretty... I've
never heard before.
Right. I actually think it is a pretty unique experience. It's really cool. I'm glad that this was one that took you by surprise, moreover, because it's actually, the first time you hear the opening track, Waking Up, it's kind of weird. You're like, what is this?
This is like Asian Teletubbies. That's how I would describe.
I think they were Asian.
Just Waking Up is a perfect example of that analogy, where she's like, waking up.
It's like super simple song topics. I've heard people describe the songs on here as akin to a series I love so much, Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared. Like, a couple of the beats on here
yes,
are very much...
I got the same vibe.
Like, these super
vibe.
Upbeat, like, synthy songs.
Kind of like, ooh, something's wrong. Like, this whole time, this whole album, something's wrong.
I never get that vibe from this
song. I
don't
know, I just get this overwhelming kind of uplifting feeling. And when I was listening to this, I kind of thought of something, and I'm going to call it the Andrew W.K. effect.
Awesome.
Where it's so happy, it's so uplifting, it's so over the top. If any other artist made this, or if it was done in a way that didn't sound authentic, it would be just, it would be off-putting. But because of the charisma of the vocals, and because of just how exuberant and fun and believable everything that she's saying is, it works very, very well.
For me, though, in my experience, especially with, like, movies and television I've watched, whenever something is super 100% happy the whole way, something's wrong.
I think so. Do you get, like, the...
I got a cult vibe from this in the best way possible.
I think that's self-created. I think you're like, something's up. Nothing can be this good. You're very... That's very cynical of you.
However, you know, Chaz does make a point. The first KKB album I've heard was their newer one, Time and Place, which there is a little bit of lyrical themes...
Much more melancholy, like, but I mean, any amount of melancholy would have been more than was on here. But that release,
I mean,
yeah.
Just that line in Graduation where she's like, I didn't learn any, especially the ending line when she says that at the end of the song.
It's a little depressing, but it's played in such a, she's like, I didn't learn anything anyway. And she's like, now I can get, it actually is, well, maybe it is a little dark towards the end too, where she's like, now I can get a PhD, and the vocals are super fuzzed out. It's kind of like the, you know, the messed up
again,
moment.
Again, it's that Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared moment.
Yeah, exactly. Where
for
everything...
any of you who don't, I'll give you the basic rundown. Don't Hug Me, I'm Scared is a YouTube series where it plays off like this. It's like a kids program with puppets and a happy like character coming in singing a song about different types of educational topics, but there's serious dark undertones and it with a lot of freaky and disturbing imagery. So if people get that feeling while listening to this, I completely agree. I completely see that in songs like Graduation or what's the one with the parent?
Hey Parents? The
Hey
Closer?
Parents. Mm-hmm. Or
Great Closer.
Especially like ending half of the album where I got this feeling of like
Trampoline is like a suit. People love this song, and I think it's awesome. It's a song about just to talk break down some of the themes on the songs in here. Waking Up is literally a song about how hard it can be sometimes to wake up in the morning. My favorite line on that song is probably, I look great, bet you can't tell I'm half awake. It's awesome. Heard a Song is my favorite one on this thing. It's just about hearing a song on the radio, trying to remember the beat. And then Sarah kind of takes this in a direction where she says, well, I can't find this song. I can't track it down. So maybe I made this. Maybe this is, and I'll put it in the studio. It's awesome. Graduation is a pretty good track about getting out of school and stuff like that. I think the weakest moments come actually in the middle of the album with Fishbowl. Kind of a cool interlude. Don't get me wrong. The worst moments on this album are still pretty good. And Big City is not something I love. I mean, it's pretty much the titles of the tracks kind of give away the meaning of the track. There's not a whole lot to read into here. Just cute moments to pick out.
I got a lot of 80s synth pop and like new romantic kind of vibe from Big City. I really enjoyed that track.
Mm-hmm. Break is an awesome like comeback for me on the album, kind of. It's a song about just doing nothing.
I adore the cowbell.
Yep.
Comes in on Break. Like every time I'm just like, oh, here we go, man. Like the cowbell is just perfect use of cowbell on a song.
Lip Slap is a cool song too. Do you guys think that song's kind of long?
Not really.
There was never a moment where I was like, this can stop now.
Okay.
Like, why are you still going on?
Lip Slap, yeah. I thought, goes on maybe 20 seconds, 30 seconds too long. I feel like it could have, like, played, because it just kind of plays out over the instrumental. It's a good instrumental, but it's maybe too much of a good thing. And the album pretty much closes with all the energy it opened with. I mean, between cuts like the interlude Paintbrush. Try Me is awesome. I love how, like, cute it is and how, like, group leader it is. Like, here's a list of all my skills, and it's in, like, these super echoey vocals of, like, business, like, out in one channel. It's awesome.
It's very sarcastic, though.
I think it is.
And I love that. It's kind of hilarious. This whole album is just
absolutely
brings a smile to my face.
And Hey Parents is a cute moment where it's like, talk to your parents. And that resonates pretty hard with me. You should love your parents.
I adore my favorite track on the album, and my favorite songs on this thing overall are just spread throughout. It's a very consistent, even listen.
A lot
Picture
of favorites.
This is my favorite track.
Really?
On the whole album. I adore that high synth melody. It just, I really like bittersweet music, you know. Mm-hmm. It just has that nostalgic and kind of romantic sort of vibe. And I just adore the melody on Picture This. It really It's been sticking in my head. I've been listening to that track quite a bit over the last
If you had to assemble like a top three of this album for songs.
Oh man, that's tough because as I'm looking through the track listing, and it's just a testament to how great the songwriting is, I remember every melody. It's so sticky. Mm-hmm. But I would go with Picture This. I love Break. Picture This, Break, and probably Waking Up.
Waking
Up, Graduation, and Hey Parents.
I was going to say Waking Up is like everyone. Like that is one of the...
The Trampoline was a good track too.
Trampoline's pretty great. Waking Up is like a perfect song to me. I adore it to pieces.
It just seems like a theme song to something.
I love the school bell that rings. It's just so energetic. Like,
yeah, that is something about this album that I absolutely love, is the creativity and the instrumentation.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't really one note. They're always throwing in some interesting sound effect, like the car
on Heard a Song, where she stops in the middle of the street and the kid runs up. I don't know you, but that sounds fresh.
Yeah.
Pretty much the best moment on the album.
There's just all kinds of like very video game soundtrack-esque mm-hmm. synth work on this album, especially on like Fishbowl, which... under 2 minutes long, I really, really enjoy that track because it's just in and out, and it has a really nice N64 style.
I will say the acting is the best thing about this.
Oh, like the super child TV show kind of?
Just when they stop and just talk to each other, and it's just so like bland and like, what do you think?
It's pretty good. Or like when she calls her producer on break, she's like, hey, Gus, I don't feel like doing anything today, so bye.
Which is, in and of itself... it's a good little track about it's good to take a break sometimes.
Yeah.
It's important.
And she also talks about, and there are actually some good points on this album. She talks about like, why is it that we want to do nothing when there's so much to do? It's like every time, whenever you're swamped, it's like, I'm just going to chill,
Right. And sometimes that's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird that you can relate to a lot of these songs.
This is an album's about growing up in a sense. I mean, graduating from school.
That's what I'm telling you. I think there's some like, there's more to this than just extremely happy, cutesy, like,
I agree. Yeah.
I agree. Definitely.
This is one of those situations where talking about the sequel album actually does some... Now, only me and Jacob have heard it, but I would encourage you to go hear it. Mm-hmm. They move in a rock direction, and like experimental rock.
I bet that's awesome. A bit of a noise pop.
There are elements of synth there.
Yeah.
There's still... Like, Fly Away is basically a synth cut, but man, the core sound is there. Sarah's still up front. Her vocals maybe are a little more... withdrawn.
A little more in the mix.
Are there still moments where they, like, just talk?
No. There's a lot of melancholy moments on this thing. This is, like, the post-college album of, like, you're in college, things are still pretty, like, we have responsibilities and things, but, like, some of us aren't paying rent. Like, not all of us are out in the own thing. We're not truly out on our own yet. We still have, like, a structure fit around light. We're not just working, coming home, paying the bills like everyone else. And that's that album, in my opinion. And Sarah's talking about things like,
how old is she?
I mean, she's 20-ish.
20s. I think she was, I don't know.
How old is she when the first album was released?
2016, which was 2 years ago.
It's 2017. It's 2017. Benito Generation.
It was 2016.
Benito mm-hmm. Generation is 2016.
Oh yeah, it is. Oops.
I'm pretty sure Graduation is talking about college graduation.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Well, because she mentions PhD. You can't get a PhD after high school.
Hold on. They might do things differently in other states. She's about 20, we'll say. I could look it up. But.
No, I think she's older than we're thinking.
The point is, like, if she's kind of in that age range of where she should be just fresh out of college or a little bit after being in college.
And where reflecting on these experiences becomes much more personal when you know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, like, she's talking about things like on songs like Only Acting, like her stage personality kind of getting... muddied by her real world experience, like getting bogged down by real life, like anyone does. There's the song, like the sequel to Break, in my opinion, is like Make Believe. It's like this song about like you got to make time to be creative and stuff. It's like I got to find time to sleep and dream.
This is a band where, like, if they just keep doing their thing, these guys like could get really popular.
I think they're one of the greatest bands that have come out of like the 2010s that I've heard.
Pop groups that I've heard in a while.
They got a really interesting sound here.
They stick out instantly, and that's important. You know what I mean? There's a lot of synth pop out there that's just like, oh boy, they're really playing that catchy melody I've heard on a lot of other songs.
Right.
But like,
instrumentally and musically, they're doing so much more than your average indie pop, even synth pop.
The production's really clean too. There's pretty much no errors in the production here. I just think sometimes maybe like my nitpicks are so small on this thing. Like, I mean, like a song like,
What is it?
She's 27, by the way.
Oh, wow, wow.
Wait,
much older. College.
Never mind.
Never mind.
She
yeah.
would have written Benito Generation.
Well, you, that's about the age you get going in music, yeah. on average, because, you know, she's been probably
at
making...
25, that's... Some people do get out of college at around that age, so...
Lip Slap, like, maybe goes on a little too long. Fishbowl and Big City maybe aren't my favorite tracks, but they're still really... Like, when I'm never skipping them. I'm never even thinking about skipping them. I want to hear everything on here all the time. It's just sometimes I want... I think, like, a complaint in quotes... would be like, sometimes I want to hear the songs I know are great over the songs that I know are pretty good.
Yeah, and even the tracks that aren't my absolute favorites here, I feel like it all plays very well into the whole album listening experience, which is just how I consume music, so I never want to skip a track. I'm listening to this from front to back, and I'm very happy all the way.
See, I love bands, and not a lot of groups do this, which disappoints me, but a good group who's really conscious of what they're creating when they're creating an album, you can listen to this... Like singles wise, like there's great singles off this, but listening to it all the way through is just a good, is just as a good experience as just listening to singles. Mm. And I really love groups that do that with their albums when they're putting it together. Like I want to make something that if you're just listening in, I'll give you a good experience. But if you take the time to listen to my whole release, you'll get an even better experience.
You'll get more out of it.
Well, albums that do that are like they're just going above and beyond, and I really appreciate
well
that.
They're respecting the album format, which it is a lost art in some ways.
Absolutely.
You know,
especially with a lot of
in pop
artists. Yeah, it's just like, let's just throw an hour of garbage,
let's just make an hour and a half trap album.
Here's 10 singles.
Bit of a trend,
Migos,
you know,
too.
Like I mean, any like Cardi B's new release, I love that album, don't get me wrong, I think it's actually a great album, but like I mean, you don't have to listen all the way through.
Well, I mean, this
I don't
is
think she even wants you to listen all the way through. I think she just did that because she has
they're just
to.
singles. There's no thematic,
like why
I don't think the album format is going away. I think everybody's still excited when an artist drops an album. People drop, you know, Beyonce can drop an album, you know, surprise album, and everybody goes crazy over it. In terms of lengths and everything, you know, I feel like a lot of the hour and a half long pop albums are just because, you know, more Spotify plays. And it's just an example of a technology changing, you know, albums back in the day in like the 60s, you know, you had 45 minute albums because that's what you could put on a record. In the 90s, when the CD became more commonplace, you had albums that were like an hour long or a little more because you could fit all of that onto the CD.
And some could...
This is just another example of technology affecting...
And to be fair, like... Even when that was the case, some could utilize that better. Like, some artists were just like, let's just put a bunch of crap in here. And some were like, you know what? I have more time, but I'm still going to create a cohesive experience that I'm trying to get.
That's why you get a lot of, like, hour-long alt-rock albums.
And if we pull this back to KKB, like, this conversation back to KKB, I mean, this is, like, 36 minutes, and it's pretty much airtight.
And it flows. It's clearly time was taken to structure this, put this together. There was a vision here, and I really respect that.
It doesn't overstay its welcome.
Absolutely.
It has a lot of great songwriting, catchy synth melodies and drum beats throughout. A lot of cool little moments that kind of break up the monotony of... It would break up a monotony if it was to exist on this album. Like the car screeching or the bells on Waking Up or, you know, a number of things on other tracks. 8 out of 10?
I'm going with an 8, and this isn't just like a light 8. This is like a strong 8, and with time could be a 9. Oh. It's just so...
Why do you guys do that light, hard, just 8? 8 out of 10?
No, it fits because you can... How close is it to a 9? Like,
it's a solid 8.
A solid 8? Okay.
Solid
8. Very
solid.
Maybe we should change... Let's change the adjectives around it. Let's go raw, medium rare, and well done.
It's a well done...
I'm feeling a well done 8 on this thing.
Wait, hold on. But well done steak is, like, lesser than, like, rare steak.
That's true.
Well, we're just... like a medium rare 8. So, like, very...
I thought medium well was, like, peak steak.
No.
Is it rare?
Steak is medium rare.
I like medium well.
I like
Brian,
medium.
I like medium.
That's fine. As long as you're not doing well done. Anytime you order a steak, well
okay,
done.
So anyway, Jacob's an 8.
I'm a medium rare.
Okay, Jacob's a medium rare.
I'm gonna use completely different adjectives from you. I'm just gonna confuse the listener to the point. What do you think? Whatever you think of this 8 is whatever you think of it. No, it's an 8 though. I'm feeling a slippery 8 on this one.
We should all use every episode. We should all use totally different rating scales that are nonsense words.
I'm not playing along with this.
No, that's, but and I guess
it, a green 9 compared to a red or yellow.
Yeah. That's not bad. Well, that hold
I'm
on. I'm
feeling
that
an
works.
Aquamarine 5 on this album. Ooh,
Aquamarine,
not.
Love that album. Strong
yeah,
8.
But yeah, 8 out of 10. Like it's bouncy. It's happy, but very. Kind of cynical and sarcastic, which I love. I love albums that do that. Funny, it's very genuine, and it's catchy, and there's great work. It's well put together. I love this. I love it.
You would be cheating yourself if you missed out on this from one listen. I encourage you. Like, you are absolutely cheating yourself if you're like, this is way too sweet, and you go away. Like, give it a chance. And I don't even think I don't think that has happened to anyone on first listen.
Anyone who comes to this and is like, listens to it once or multiple times and is like, I don't like this, has no soul and no heart.
I feel like waking up is like an instant win you over moment.
Yeah,
so.
I was,
because like everybody agrees with that. There's no one in the world who isn't like, yeah, it do be like that sometimes.
They said that exactly that.
The album that I chose is the 1989 seminal hip-hop release by the Beastie Boys, Paul's Boutique. The Beastie Boys, obviously a very well-known Golden Age hip-hop band. They released License to Ill in 1986, which was a very major success, very popular album with hit singles. And then 3 years later, in 89, with the help of the Dust Brothers on production, released Paul's Boutique. And this album, when it first came out, was pretty much panned. It was such a different sound. It utilizes a lot of samples and, especially for the time, very experimental production. Very forward-thinking production. But I will turn it over to one of you, whichever you wants to take it first.
First mentioning the sampling, if you were to do anything like this nowadays, you would be sued so quick and swiftly with such aggressiveness that you would not survive. Instant bankruptcy.
It would cost an incredible amount of money. And we've already seen this just a couple years ago, Danny Brown's Atrocity Exhibition, which features fantastic sampling.
Yep.
You know, he's come out and said he lost money on that album because of the amount that it cost to produce it. In 1989, before all the copyright laws and everything were in place, that was really the only time that an album like this could be made.
I love the Beastie Boys. I've been a huge Beastie Boys fan for so many years. I love License to Ill. It's one of my favorite hip-hop records. These guys don't get enough credit. They're definitely one of the forefront men of the golden age of hip-hop, right up there with all the classics. But these guys, I love the Beastie Boys purely on the fact that like they try so hard to be tough and intimidating, but they're such dorks. The Beastie Boys are such dorks. And they're so charmingly, like their delivery and like, every song on every album is the same when it comes to their flow. Da-da-da, da-da-da, and it's me, Mike D. Like, that whole...
It's actually so impressive how they're able to rap over each other.
Mm-hmm,
there's no verse-to-verse structure. It's Mike, Paul, like, they're all over each other. Like, Mike D and Paul are just, like, they're swapping lines. It'd be like, if me and Jacob had... Okay, we're gonna try a bit here. It'd be like, if we were having a conversation and you...
Kept going with the conversation.
And then I finished the sentence and then you took the...
End of the sentence, and
then I topped it off with the period. That was pretty good.
That was terrible.
No, that's fine. Keep that. They demonstrate immense talent being able to do that, and it doesn't sound sloppy. It's all very deliberate. Like, I shudder to think of how many times they maybe had to record this to get it that way. Like, I can't tell if they're all in one booth or if the booths were cut, or if the vocal passages were cut together at different points.
It's classic Beastie Boys. Now, getting into this album, I didn't know what to expect. The way Jacob described it is like, ooh, there's going to be some interesting sampling, but I was hoping there'd still be that classic Beastie Boys delivery. Was not disappointed one bit. Every song, it's just them talking about what they do. Like, they're trying so hard to be tough. Like, we kill people, we rob, we steal, we have sex.
Really one song like that,
yeah,
though.
Well, but you know what I mean.
A lot of the raw aggression on here is fueled by their getting released from Def Jam, their label, which is typically how a lot of
cussing on this album, too.
Yeah, a lot of swearing. I didn't expect that. A lot of, you'll find that a lot of artists release maybe their most aggressive or edgy, I guess, album after being released from a label, because like it's not a great process leaving.
That theme and style that these guys are known for has not left one bit, and I'm happy for that. So when you put that over the beat work, because like the lyrically, this album's okay. Like it's nothing.
Lyrically, it's phenomenal. You read up on how many references and allusions and like the wordplay on this thing is.
There are so many
good
quotables.
It's very, yeah, it is. It is. But just for me personally, I don't go to Beastie Boys for like lyrical.
I mean, it's not really like
for
trying
the time.
To make
I bet
a,
this was like whoa.
Well, it's still whoa today. It's not really trying to make any big major points. It's not really conscious hip hop, but it's charismatic.
Yes, there are a lot.
I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying, like, you said conscious hip hop. That, like, obviously, that's not what you go to the Beastie Boys for. But when you put just that, their classic delivery and flow behind these beats, some amazing music here.
The energy on this album is incredible.
I can't even describe to you just how many switch-ups there were and how seamlessly it was and how each beat that came before the other was just as interesting and cohesive and worked with the music and what it was trying to do. Wow, this album is phenomenal.
And how every track flows into each other. But
I have one issue. Mm-hmm. Jacob, I want you to take a guess what my one issue with this album is.
The last track is too long.
It is too long for one simple reason. For one simple reason. There is no structure to that track whatsoever. It's just my biggest issue is like, why couldn't these guys just separate this? Because it's just a bunch of different songs glued together. They should have just made it separate.
Oh, you're
track.
Talking about the B-side tracks. Yeah. I thought you were talking about Shadrock or whatever. Shadrack, my bad. I thought you were talking about that track. I was like, it's like 4 minutes.
No, the 12-minute track.
The stuff at the end? Oh, see, mine were separated, so it wasn't. But it's still basically one big continuous B-side.
Mm-hmm. So why wasn't it just separate tracks? Because it would be the same length. It would just be separate tracks. Why did it have to be a 12-minute track?
Well, how does it being a bunch of different tracks all crammed into one mix change it from being separated on a playlist?
Why did it have to be one long track?
You're hearing the same thing. Why does separating them visually?
I don't know, because like, at least then I know, like, okay, then I'm on this song. When I'm just listening, I'm just like, we're still going? Oh my God, we're still going.
I think the sections are pretty distinct, though.
Yeah, they are.
But that's the thing. Like, there's no... Like, when you have a long song, there's got to be some cohesiveness and City Hall and Tenacious D's debut, while silly and goofy, there's an actual story. There's a reason why it's so long. This is just long for the sake of being long.
No, but you said there are a bunch of... You agree that there are a bunch of different parts coming together, right?
Yeah.
So there are a lot of different... There are different songs, clearly. They're
but there's
distinct.
No... They don't flow into each other. It just stops.
No, but
they flow very well.
The whole point of... I think they do flow into each other, but I agree with your... Because normally I would have that complaint, and I can sympathize with that, and I see what you're saying, but think about it this way. This is one 13-minute cut of B-sides. It's not supposed to be assembled. It's not meant to. This is not like a mini EP at the end of the album. This is like, and here's the fat we trimmed. That's what this is.
Sonically, each beat was really cool, and it's just them rapping about what they normally rap about. But just something irked me about, like, why does this have to be a long track at the end of this album? I don't get that.
How you feel about that like long section of like B-sides is how I would usually feel about a long section like that. I like when we talked about the interludes and in, like on Buckethead Land 2. And on, there was another album, They Might Be Giants, correct? Mm-hmm. Where there's a section in the middle where there's a lot of 30-second, 1 minute. And this is pretty much the same. It's a lot of 50-second, 1 minute, the longest one being like 2 minutes, that all in a row, right at the end. But I think it's on purpose. And the way, and plus they're all so great. Like I love the woozy bass. I love Get On The Mic, that just like beatbox, spit flow. I love the live cuts from AWOL, I believe, and the track at the end. I adore the B-sides I think you could argue that it doesn't punctuate the album as well as Shadrack, which just, is like one of the best songs I've ever heard.
It makes for a weird ending to the album.
I really like the ending because when you think about the statement that was made with the production, this kind of felt like the Dust Brothers saying, or in the Beastie Boys just coming together and saying, look, we have all of this material that we couldn't put on this album. Let's just make this collage of beats.
This thing is a monster. This is a 53-minute release, and I mean, if you cut off the last track, it's still all close to 50 minutes if you cut off all the B-sides.
But see, that's the thing. It didn't feel like 50 minutes to me until...
Oh, it's an easy 50 minutes.
It did not, but it didn't... But that's the cool thing about the Beastie Boys, just each track... I liked how each track from the beginning just flows into each other.
Absolutely.
Like, one after the other after the other. Honestly, if that's the case, especially with the last track, this whole thing should have just been one long hour track.
And that, I mean, like, it feels like that because it flows like so well. But every track can be taken on its own as well.
But that's the thing. Like, I don't understand that sentiment of, like, we couldn't fit this all in the album, so here's just, bam, a 12-minute track.
Because
if that's the case, you could fit that on the album because you did. You just put it all together instead of having it separate tracks.
But they're very much not finished songs, except for maybe the 2-minute cut
that
towards the
true.
End. I can't remember. It has the guitar in it. The
I don't know the name of the individuals because I know that song as the collective.
So
I don't know the individual names.
But the longest track on there, like the 2-minute one, I was listening to the 20th edition remaster, mm-hmm. so it had the track separated for me to kind of see.
Oh, see, I listened to the...
Maybe that does make it easier to appreciate. I don't think I would have thought less of it anyway. Because here's the thing. The album is so revolutionary, and it's doing something that's so genius and ahead of its time that it's showing, like, here is stuff that we... Like, this is what we could put together with the scraps. And the scraps are amazing. If there were a B-sides, the Paul's Boutique, it would still be one of the greatest hip-hop B-sides ever. Maybe even one of the greatest albums. Because
I'm not trying to knock this album because this is phenomenal. Like, I would give anything to just see the Dust Brothers in action, taking these samples and somehow flipping them over and cutting them up and just doing what they did.
And the way that the sampling, like how the Beastie Boys use samples as like the punchline to a verse.
I love that.
This is like the first time I've heard an album that's like kind of old and like where I hear this in almost everything I listen to, from the sampling, which is so ahead of its time, it wouldn't be even used in the next decade the way it was used on Paul's Boutique.
Right. This Paul's Boutique sounds almost more modern than much of 90s hip hop.
Yeah. You're not getting stuff on like Paul's Boutique sampling until the 2000s. Like, and even beyond that.
And not as aggressively and as freely as
it gets harder because this album, you know, is it has free reign. It's sampling everything from DMX to Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho to
there's a Johnny Cash sample on here.
Yep.
Too.
In the first
Public Enemy.
In the first two songs on this album, there are over 30 samples.
My favorite sample bit is when they end a line verse with the and she thinks she's the passionate one. I love that use of that sample.
The Psycho sample on Eggman is my favorite use. The chorus is
great
the Psycho sample underneath. Like, nying, nying, I'm the Eggman, baby. Like, it's awesome. And it's so, this album is so funny.
I would love to see if someone like tally up and you know, use inflation and everything like that, but tally up how much it would cost today to try and do a project.
Hard
like
to
this.
Tell because the labels might ask for different amounts.
You know? Yeah.
Well, and I mean, like, and just take that into account. I wonder how much making an album, trying to make the same album today would cost.
Thousands and thousands.
I mean, people still sample today. You see, like, the opposite of this, where.
Like, from this much, like, all these different samples.
Right.
Some of these samples probably cost, like, not that much to, like, maybe millions of dollars.
I mean, God, they sample. I mean, Jesus, like, they sample Led Zeppelin on this thing. They sample Zeppelin too.
Sample a lot of great old funk.
Trying to do that today.
The funk samples are egregious on this thing. There are so many, and they're generous. It's basically just plucked. The Rick James sample is like straight from the song. Even the first track on this album, just a little lead in to All the Girls, is the beat is just a sample. They
do a lot of needle dropping. Like They just put an instrumental on and just start going over it.
I think the ones that go over the best are the vocal samples that are interjected. I love when they cut their own song out and just use the stolen section of a song, like on
stolen, not really stolen.
Stolen, not for the time, but by today's standards would be more or less stolen.
Technically, yes.
You know, and I'm not saying that's here or there. I'm just saying that's the context. The Public Enemy sample, you know, now they got me in a cell, and it the whole song, this like super kooky upbeat track, and the rock fusion on basically every track here. Mm. Any guitar that's on this thing is flawless.
I love the funk guitar on Hey Ladies. It's so catchy. It's amazing.
God. Everything on this album is so... I was laughing so hard the first time I heard this album because I was... It's just so instantaneous and mind-blowing. And the tracks are funny, and there's so many references to catch that it's worth going back and digging for, like, these lyrical gems. Like when Mike D says, if I ate vegetables, they'd call me Spinach D, as in he's devouring the spinach, because Mike D is Mike Devour. Hilarious. His album is sexist, but it's awesome. Like, it's like when he talks about...
This is a sign of the times.
Yeah,
man.
You know, they don't talk about women very respectfully, but it's still really cool and funny. Like, I don't know. I can't...
I love how they use the word booty a lot.
Booty's good.
It's a solid word.
Mm-hmm.
like the sound of it.
And talking about instantly catchy. Catchy is usually pretty important for me in songs. I like to be able to kind of go along with songs sometimes. And, I mean, some has it on basically every track. Shake Your Rump. I love that sample, too. Shake Your Rump. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's awesome. Johnny Royale is a song that every time it comes on, I'm so happy it's in the track list.
I love the guitar sample on the chorus.
Yep. It's awesome. They're just talking, and that song's about like some homeless dude. They gave a jacket.
Yeah.
This is the most forward thinking production wise, but lyrically, I mean, it's just, you know, it's just
it's very
like,
lyrical, especially, I mean, for 89, the amount of, you don't get hip hop this lyrical until, you know, about this time or maybe a couple years before with like Eric B. and Rakim. Like all of these references to movies, TV, comics, other music.
It's a pop culture collage.
Absolutely.
Lyrically.
Yeah.
I love the Beastie Boys are a really charming group, how just dorky they are, and they try to be so tough.
Love the Kentucky Fried Breakdown right after. Yeah. Oh, the another vocal sample that's great is on.
Do you like the instrumental breaks where there's like no rapping? It's just.
Oh, I love them. Yeah,
there's very
fantastic.
Few, isn't it?
It's very interesting. Well, it's very interesting. I wonder why they did that. Like,
what'd you think of the science? What's the name of that song?
The Sound of Science.
The Sound of Science. I love the way that track starts. It's so like weird. It's one of the weirdest ones.
They
on
They sample a lot of Beatles tracks on that one.
And it's awesome. I love at the end when he's like dropping science like Galileo dropped the orange. It's like soaked. It's like echoed and reverb.
That's a mic drop line.
It's awesome.
Heard one, you know.
God, it's so incredible
this
and smart, and it's so fulfilling to finally hear something and it's like. Yeah, like, you know how, like, things are like, well, this was really influential and it deserves credit for that. This is the only time I've ever thought that and think it adds so much to the album. This could never be released today because of the cost, but I'm so happy they did this because this is, like, essential for modern music.
If they didn't release this album, we wouldn't have any album like this, period.
People aren't going to have as ambitious, like, people aren't going to go on to very ambitiously sample things. You don't have people sampling Radiohead or...
Yeah, you might not have a DJ Shadow without this album.
Right.
Like, let's say you're just someone listening to it, not knowing how much production is going on here.
We can't appreciate
this, it.
It
feels like any other Beastie Boys record, like, from, like, just the surface level.
Oh, yeah, the production.
So I'm wondering why this didn't get critically acclaimed until much later.
It does kind of blow me away that this was panned, because their core sound's there. If you've heard Brass Monkey, or everyone's heard Beastie Boys, anybody on the planet with ears and that is breathing has heard No Sleep Till Brooklyn or Brass Monkey, even just on accident. So, like, you know, their core sound is there. If you enjoyed
that song.
It just has
better beats. I think the beat work is way better than on their first album.
Well, the production,
I'm wondering why this didn't work out.
Sonically, you know, the beat work was very different. Maybe not what people were expecting. Lyrically, it's a lot less accessible. It's a little more, you know, it's a lot more complex.
Too, and yeah.
If you don't get the references, I love the line where he's talking about how your mom, your mom was messing with one of our boys, like the third Beastie Boys, like the guy they reference is like a cameraman for the band who went around and his goal was to, I believe, give backstage passes to girls who were cute in the crowd. So and they would often walk in on him in the midst of relations. So if I could phrase it that way.
Classic.
A very awesome line. God, it's memorable. It's so catchy. It's so forward thinking. And like it's a landmark moment. For music in general, I wouldn't say maybe just for hip hop. I think there, as far as hip hop goes, there are probably more established classics that do more for the genre as a whole. But this thing for production in hip hop and production for what would go on to be experimental music, because this is still rooted in pretty conventional songwriting. But the production is just so off the wall that it would, what it did for music and what it did for how the way people think about you can assemble music and how legitimate it is to, instead of being influenced by sounds, take those sounds and plop them into your songs. Mm-hmm. That's so critical.
How creative sampling can be. If anyone is like, well, sampling, you're just stealing it. But like, there is definitely an art and a craft to putting them in a way that works so well.
Look at songs today. Like, there's sometimes I'll hear a sample. I'm like, wow, what they did to that to make it the way it was for the actual song is amazing.
Or even if you just look at a guy like Kanye, whose last three albums have generously sampled, and I mean undoctored, basically.
But
like,
he has the money to do it.
Exactly. You know? But because he has that tool, and because guys like the Beastie Boys set a standard, like, hey, we're just gonna take this, and they creatively twist it. You get guys like Kanye who are like, I'm just gonna take this, we're just gonna put this in the song as it is, and we're gonna create a great song around it. And it's a perfectly, in my opinion, legitimate way to create music. And if Beastie Boys don't sample something like that, you're not getting people even trying that until like 2010.
Maybe a little
DJ
earlier
Shadow.
Than that.
And
that's what frustrates
you.
Like, not Introducing was one of the first albums made entirely of samples.
Not in the mainstream.
That's what frustrates me, that like the Beastie Boys do not get enough credit as like one of the forefronters of the hip hop golden era.
You know, this album was panned when it came out, but it's being looked upon now as pretty much a definitive classic. You know, a lot has been said about this album, a lot of stuff that we've said. You know, so it wasn't, again, it wasn't a risky pick, but I wanted to introduce it to you two because I figured you'd get something out of it.
For two people who have never heard it, I mean, this is essential. Go listen to this album. If you like hip hop, if you like music with generous sampling, and if you listen to music beyond just the radio, or if you're just getting into music, or if you've been into music for years and you haven't heard this album, this is like a must listen. This is pretty much essential to hear how it influenced. Like, I guarantee if you've listened to music in any serious capacity, you will hear the influence this thing has. And that's a struggle for me, hearing older releases and being like, well, this is really influential, and not getting it. When you get it, it's great, and you will appreciate it so much more.
This album is 9 out of 10.
I'm going with a 9 also. You know, it's definitely one of my favorite hip-hop albums. I wouldn't call it like an integral part of my being, which is really what I reserve that 10 out of 10
Jacob's
for.
Yeah, Jacob's well known for getting women and murdering people and causing a ruckus and partying.
Giving homeless dudes
Jacob.
Shoes.
Exactly.
Yeah, just anything they say, Jacob does that.
I do all of this.
Yes.
Jacob is
three people.
It's instead of Paul's Boutique, it should be Jacob's Boutique.
Yes.
Exactly.
Man, oh man.
Exactly. But yeah, definite 9 out of 10 for me.
It's thrilling. It's a landmark moment for music. It's instantaneous. It's addictive. It's funny. It's energetic. 10. Feeling a 10 on Paul's Boutique.
The album I picked is Teenage of the Year by Frank Black, who most of you may know as the frontman to legendary band The Pixies. This is his second solo studio album. A friend of mine in middle school came up to me one time and said, "Hey, listen to this song. It's called Whatever Happened to Pong?" And I listened to it and I was like, "Wow, this is amazing." But I never went farther than that. And I've since been really wanting to listen to this record all the way through and see what it is, because that opening track is phenomenal. That's still like a...
Can we all agree on that? What Happened to Pong is great.
What Happened to Pong is a really good song.
It's probably the best song in this album, and it's a shame that it's the first thing we listen to.
I don't think it's the best.
I don't think it's the best song, but it's definitely enjoyable.
What's your best song? This is your favorite is What Happened to Pong?
Yeah, that's fine. What's your favorite?
My favorite's probably Headache. I feel like it's the most memorable and earwormy in the whole album.
I actually like Pie in the Sky the most.
So let's see. All right. I don't love this album. For a reason that is kind of sad to me, because there is a lot of wonderful composition here and songwriting. The problem with this album is that this seems like someone who just made a bunch of songs and then just put them together.
This is a mixtape.
It is a mixtape. None of these songs flow into each other. There's no themes. There's no rhyme or reason. We go from Whatever Happened to Pong to Thalassocracy, which I couldn't even tell you is about. Like, a lot of cryptic lyrics, but not in a good way. There's a lot of just...
way too understated, not in an interesting way.
But there's great music here, though. That it's so, like, lyrically, this is not an album that I'm loving. But musically, I love a lot of these songs. But my problem is that, like, just a song goes into the next, I'm like, what does this have to do with anything?
Right. I feel like this album is too much of a good thing. I think on their own, each track here is enjoyable.
Sure.
I think that Frank Black his pedigree is very high, his songwriting ability. But this album is an hour long, and normally lengthy albums aren't much of an issue with me, but it's very samey. I don't feel like these tracks are very varied. I feel like a lot of them try to accomplish the same thing, and it gets to the point where it gets to become a slog to get through by, you know, about the halfway point.
Leg is pretty awful to have to sit through, in my opinion.
Which sucks, because there is some amazing, like, little things happening throughout the album. Like, the use of organ is really cool, and there's little synth moments, and I love
some horns,
that.
Some horns.
I love that. Like, on Pain, I love just little uses of different instruments that you would normally not hear in albums like this, just coming in, doing the thing, and coming out. Like, I love stuff like that. But just right off the bat, a great opener to an album that just kind of goes into another song where, like, wait, so what's the point of this album? What are you talking about?
There's no one concept on here, and that's fine. You can just have an album that's just a bunch of songs that maybe aren't that closely related.
But not this many songs.
But, like, how close sonically some of these songs are to each other, and there are very few I can pick out after Old Mulholland. I cannot tell you what any of these songs
are. And I wanted to like this album, because I love a lot of the sounds and instrumentation going on here. There's great guitar work. A lot of the solos are really cool, and there's a lot of cool riffs being utilized here. But it's just, man, I'm it's hard for me to get behind something when, like, sure, you can have a couple singles off this album, but like I said before, a great album to me, I can have singles, and I can listen to the whole album and still get a great experience out of it. I wanted to like this when I was listening to it, but through the whole time I'm thinking, like, we're on track, like, 16.
Of 22,
yeah. And you haven't said anything. You haven't said a message to me. And this is his second studio album. Like,
and a lot of these songs aren't even catchy.
I may disagree with you on that.
Okay.
There are a few catchy melodies here and there, but nothing memorable. That's what I'll say.
Sure, but...
Like KGB, that's memorable and catchy. This is just kind of catchy.
I wanted to take my time with this thing because this is actually, it's such a dense listen that 22 tracks, an hour long, even if it's not that interesting, I felt it was necessary to kind of dig deeper and look at the lyrics and stuff like that. And there's nothing lyrically on here that's blowing you away. There are some small, interesting moments.
I said, whatever happened to Pong?
Like, Sir Rockabye has some kind of interesting, like, sad lyrics. I actually, a grower for me on this thing was Abstract Plane. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that one's kind of cool. Pong is instantaneous. The Lacrosse kind of grew on me as well. Nothing after track seven, Headache grew on me. Headache actually grew off me. Mm-hmm. Something about the singing on this track is horrible. I can't stand the way his vocal sounds on this track. I think the refrain is catchy.
Do you like the Pixies?
He sings
about the same.
Well, his vocal approach on the Pixies is quite different than this.
I've not heard the Pixies, so maybe I'm lacking.
The songs
that
I've heard,
there's no yelping aggression from the Pixies.
My favorite track on here, White Noise Maker, maybe second favorite track on here, features some awesome like screaming towards the end. I thought it was really compelling. It's really the only blood pumping moment on the album.
And I think this is what we mentioned before. How in the 90s, when the CD came out, artists felt like they had to put in more stuff because they could. And you know what? After listening to this, you're totally right.
That's the biggest issue here.
Frank Black was like, wow, I have more time to do more stuff. Let's just add more crap. I feel like some producers should have come and be like, look, Frank, you got some great stuff here, but you need to trim this sucker.
This thing needed to be pared down to like a 40-minute
album. It would have done the album so much better.
Maybe just a 35-minute album with the best songs on here.
And just, like, some themes. Like, what is the connect about whatever happened to Pong to Pie in the Sky? What is the message I'm supposed to get from this release? There's nothing.
It's just fun rock songs written. And the songwriting, now, structurally, I mean, they're all pretty samey. This is, you know, verse, chorus. I mean, Jesus, by the time, there are so many forgettable solos on this thing. By the time I'm on my fifth or sixth guitar solo, I just want them to stop. They're just dragging the track out.
I disagree. I think that is one of the best things about this album is the guitar work.
It would only serve to break up the monotony of the track if it hadn't tried to do that on so many tracks before. And by the time we get to the fifth or sixth guitar solo, it's just another guitar solo on the album.
It has a decent ending. Pie in the Sky, I think, is a good closer.
I think it's a great closer.
But it's just, what have we learned? We learned nothing from this.
Right. It's too much of a good thing. I feel like any of these tracks on their own, they may not be amazing, but they're
good.
Solid.
Which is weird because, like, this album is kind of critically acclaimed. It's
on
Pitchfork's top 100 albums of the 90s, but I just don't see what there is to like love about this
the
album.
Appeal
there's a lot to like, but there's not a lot to
solid.
Love.
It's like an 8. Most people put this thing at like an 8.
A lot of people really enjoy this album, and I, you know, coming into this album, I'm a huge fan of the first two Pixies albums, and then the last two to a lesser extent. So I was really excited to come into this because Frank Black has some incredible songwriting under his belt by the time 94 rolls around. And I listened to this album. Immediately, I was kind of disappointed with the sound, but then I had to kind of tell myself, like, no, this isn't a Pixies release. This is a Frank Black solo. I should not be expecting Pixies-esque sounds.
Yeah, going into it, I didn't even think about the Pixies. I was just thinking about, this is what Frank Black is trying to do.
With no primers to the sound, this was pretty dime a dozen rock for me.
I agree, and that's something, like, I enjoyed it a little more.
Which is interesting when you think about it, because, like, this is the frontman of the Pixies, one of the most, like, influential bands of the 90s.
I just wanted to talk about how much filler is on this album. I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but like,
I mean, you're not wrong. There's so much filler. We have like, this is like a Nicki Minaj Queen problem.
Speedy Marie, a song I initially liked, every time it came on, it's like 4 minutes and it's pointless. It's not even it's about a girl, from what I can tell. It's not even sweet or compelling. The Vanishing Spies, Calistan's an okay moment, but it feels like filler. And then from basically, after All Mulholland, Phaser Eyes, I Could Stay Here Forever, The Hostess with the Mostest, Super Abound, Big Red, that's like 6 songs.
The Hostess with the Mostest, I think, is the worst song in here. I just didn't
any track within there could be my worst. They're all filler. They're all pointless. And by
which
this
time, maybe because like I wanted to love this album because like right off the bat, what a great opener. And as it just goes on, I'm like, I'm liking what I'm hearing, but I'm just not getting it. Like, what am I supposed to take from this?
And I enjoyed this album more, like on my second and third listens. Because in the first listen, you know, I feel like I came in with expectations. And then when I tempered those expectations and I started enjoying it more, but then I kind of, you know, my enjoyment planed off at a certain point.
Right.
I think one of my issues with this album that we haven't touched on yet, the production is very studio. This feels like very much of a studio recording. I don't really feel like these instrumentals are exciting or raw or you know, have any edge or bite to them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's an expectation because the Pixies has that in spades. But I do feel like with alternative rock and with, you know, much rock music in general, you got to have just some excitement. And I felt like the production here was very clean. And I didn't, you know, you mentioned the organ in the synths. I wasn't too big on the organs in the synths. I just felt like some of the instrumentation here and the production here was just a little too safe.
It's funny that you mentioned that, though, because, like, this is the Wikipedia page, so this could be totally wrong, but, you know, here we go. This album features work by several of the Pixies musicians, their guitarist Joey Santiago and guitarist Lyle Workman. So it's not just Frank Black from the Pixies, it's other members from the Pixies at the time. This should be a
The Pixies were done by 94.
This should be an amazing record. I don't know what the disconnect here is.
Even trying to contextualize the sound, I was like, this came out in 94, like, this feels even more trite. In retrospect, we talk about Weezer a little bit. In retrospect, I'm maybe not as hot on Weezer as I initially thought, but, like, I would take Weezer for this any day. Like the
yeah, this is very safe.
Like,
this is,
there's some power pop. There's some Weezer-like moments on here, but, man, it is not even close.
Not even, though. Like, as a being from a true Weezer fan, like, good God. Like, this.
Some of the guitars are kind of
remind me. No, I have to say, listening to this album, though I was disappointed by it, he does have a self-titled debut solo release that's quite a bit shorter than this.
Yeah, Frank, and The Cult of Ray that will come after this is, a lot, I think, a lot better.
But what, what does
so
that
I'm
say
about... So I definitely
want
to go and listen to his initial album because I do think that Frank Black is a very strong songwriter. And he's proven it before, so I'm excited to see what else he has to
that's
offer.
That's the biggest issue with this album is, like, it's Frank Black, the frontman of the Pixies. There should be no, like, we should not be sitting here saying, wow, this was a disappointment. This should be like, wow, this is amazing.
Well, you know, sometimes you have to temper your expectations, and you can't expect artists
I wasn't expecting a Pixies album, but I was expecting more, like, themes and cohesion, not just a bunch of songs compiled together with a lot of filler.
But even
Frank freaking Black,
when you take the context out, and, you know, if you didn't even know who the artist was, I still feel like my complaints would remain
I'd
the same.
I'd still say whatever happened to Pong is
my complaints about
song.
The production, which, you know, it's good production, but it doesn't have much bite to it, and
it's standard.
Yeah, it's very, very safe production.
The songwriting on here, not exciting. Lyrically, there's some moments. There's one song on here that's kind of weird. It's about a guy who worked with, like, he built a dam in California. And that song's kind of interesting, I guess, for the topic.
I think,
like,
the biggest disappointment for me is lyric-wise.
There's man, it is just a wasteland, lyrically. There is basically nothing
interesting. Which is so weird, because, like, I wonder who, like, writes the... Does Frank Black write the songs for, like lyrically for the Pixies, or is it more of like a group thing?
Frank Black was in charge of most of it.
So,
I think.
So what the hell?
This is just proof that, like, we, you know, when we talk about they might be giants, how they talk, you know, maybe they're talking about something, but at the end of the day, there's a lot of nonsense in the lyrics. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that's to a
but
fault.
That's charming. It's boring.
It's a good thing. It's written in a way that's catchy, memorable. He's talking about stuff on here, but he's stripped it back so much that I have been handed like a popsicle stick with not even a joke written on it. And there's no residue of the once delicious sugary flavor that once populated the majority of the stick. I am holding lifeless wood. This thing is trite.
What a poignant metaphor there, Brian. Congratulations.
It's bored. I just think about how bored I was. I took breaks from this. I would get to track 10 on this thing, and then I'd go listen to KKB, and then I would finish it. I couldn't finish. Like, I stomached this.
And you
in
know
one.
What? I agree. I was like, I wanted to like this so much, but
maybe I'm being hard on it. And there are some, and admittedly, this isn't the worst album you have to listen to. It's an hour long. I mean, there's way worse than this. It's an hour long.
Yeah, I still like this album. There are
and
it tricks on,
you.
I enjoy it.
Do you all think that's a great opener? Am I just the only one who thinks that?
It has the most energy. You
know? It does. And everything, there is never another song that reaches that energy this song has. Like, right off the gate, that dun 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 dun. It's awesome. I love that.
It's a thrashing.
And I love
music.
I love the distortion on his vocals. I'm like, this is going to be an awesome album. And then just like as we go, I'm like, what happened? Where's the energy? Where's the distortion? Where's the genuineness?
I hate I Could Stay Here Forever. It's annoying. I Could Stay Here. It's like an annoying hook. And he talks about nothing. And the hook isn't even that memorable. The playing underneath, like that guitar might as well have been dipped in bleach before it was played. It's so free of error. It's so studio. It's so like how I'm speaking now is how I feel about this album. Like my cadence and my tone is like it's just
your voice has had a noticeable lack of energy.
It's so boring. Now I will say as we get it opens well and closes great. That is the highest praise I can give this album.
I'm
Pie in the Sky
you.
Is an awesome song. Bad Wicked World's great little outro. It's like 2 minutes, but it doesn't. These songs don't overstay their welcome. All these songs are under 3 minutes. From Space Is Gonna Do Me Good to Pie in the Sky, the last five tracks.
Maybe I'm wrong. Like maybe it wasn't Frank Black who was like, I gotta get more songs in this. I wouldn't be surprised if a studio head came in and was like, yo, Frank, this is some great stuff, but you should really add like 16 more tracks to this album. And Frank's like, yo, that's too much. But no, you have to do it.
I couldn't pick,
all right.
I couldn't pick five
here
tracks
go.
On here that are great, though. I couldn't even pick five. There are 22 songs on here, and not even five of them are great. There are three great ones off the top of my head.
See, that's where I disagree. I feel like if you were to just cut a lot of the filler off this, you'd have a much more solid, classic Frank Black
again,
album.
Because
I
even though
that.
I have issues with the length and the, how it's very repetitive, and I have issues with the production, I do think at its core, the songwriting is solid, and that's why I still enjoy this album. You know, I still like this album, and as background music, I feel like it works a lot better than like sitting down and really trying to digest it and analyze it. So background, like as background music, this is an enjoyable listen, but. It's just not enough for me to want to come back to it.
But that's the thing. You shouldn't be saying that about a Frank Black record.
Right. I just want more.
If the highest praise like you can give it is like, you can hear this and it's fine. You know what I mean? Even his background
that's
music.
That's more of an
like,
insult, Jacob, when you think about it.
I just
it.
Wish.
That's
well,
just,
it's still it's not something
you're saying
that I want to immediately just turn off. You know?
Right.
So I still like it. You know, I think that what he's doing on this album is good, but again, it's just too much of a good thing.
I don't even think it's... I just think it's too much in general. I am begging for this thing to be over at, like, track 10. Mm. Like, I'm like, man, there are 12 more tracks?
Me
like,
too.
Jesus.
Right. Oh, my God.
It's mostly filler, and I couldn't even think of a way to arrange the track list to pick out the songs that I like the most and get this thing anywhere above, like, a 6 for me.
I'd stick with the opener and closer, like, as your opener and closer. But just... If the whole album sounded more like Whatever Happened to Pong with that distortion and that just energy... It'd be so much better, but there's some slow moments on this album where I'm like, wow, really? You're doing this?
But to
Why?
Give it a little credit, it's not like offensively bad. It's not like, I mean, it's not, none of this is...
It's disappointing.
None of this is poor. It's just trite, and it's been played, and it doesn't do anything, and it's not new, and it's not thrilling, even if it were doing something that had been done before. There are plenty of other bands, even just solo artists, that can replicate this sound and have compelling songs about things and not just... completely bare-bone lyrics to a fault on this thing. It is, you know, unconditionally, like, it's just so boring, and there's no attempt to make anything interesting, you know. Even I can't boil this album down to anything I love except for like three tracks. Like I just wish this thing weren't so long, because I feel like this is, the playing is fine, there are some pretty good moments on here, some really, even moments that I would dare to call great, but at the end of the day, It's an hour of mostly filler, uncompelling songs, and barely songs, because they're songs in that they are structured for verse, chorus. Let's dip a solo in here to get the track time out to 3 minutes. This feels like what Modern Trap does, what we talked about earlier, where they just put a bunch of tracks out and get more streams. This feels like that for like dad rock.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with a 6 on this thing. I do think it's it's enjoyable, but it's just way too much. It's played way too safe, and it was disappointing to me. But, you know, it's not a bad album, but it's just, it's very safe.
It's not the worst thing you could hear. I could take it or leave it. I'm like a strong 4, light 5 on this thing on its best day. It's too long. There's almost nothing here of substance. What the best things about this thing are, some of it is catchy, some of it is well played, but most of it is way too non-exploring. It's just trite.
Kind of nondescript.
Yeah.
6 out of 10. This is like... as big of a disappointment as it comes for me. And this is my pick. I was ready to, like, love this album and
I thought you would.
But, like, no. I was like, wow,
well,
really?
You know, 6 for me. You know, 6 is still a positive score.
Yeah, I didn't hate this album, but, man, was I...
I'm feeling mostly negative, but I've heard worse.
Mm-hmm.
That's about how I feel.
I'm crying.
Next time, it is a themed episode. We're going to do a sequel episode or a reprise. I feel like musically it's better to call it a reprise.
Basically, this means... we are allowed to pick an album from an artist we've already talked about.
Two of these are from the Weird episode, which is really funny when you think about it.
Because both of us had that idea of like, wow, this is a horrible introduction to this great artist.
Right. And I'm not even picking the best introduction by any means.
I think, in my opinion,
thematically, this is a sequel for me.
Well, this is a sequel to me because I really want to give you a good taste of
and
what
we could,
this artist can do.
I would like to do more of these in the future. Not so frequently, but you
this
know.
This will probably
like,
be the themed episode where we'll have actual sequels to this themed episode.
Or this will return.
Right.
Where
every
like,
now and then do something kind of like this.
Yeah. Right.
And, so, Jacob, you introduce it? You want to start?
I've chosen another album by The Drones. We previously talked about The Miller's Daughter, which
did
is...
Did not like The Drones, so you better bring it to
I'm
me.
I'm so happy to hear more Drones, man.
The Miller's Daughter, you know, noisy, bluesy, but instead I've chosen the album released a little over a decade after The Miller's Daughter, their most recent album, 2016's Feeling Kinda Free, which I think you'll find sonically is a bit of a departure.
Okay. I'm doing Coma by Buckethead. Your guys' first introduction to Buckethead was a horrible one, but and even then, that album was not my favorite. It's probably one of my least favorite Buckethead albums, but just for the theme, it worked perfectly. But right. I want to give you guys a good taste of what he is capable of, songwriting-wise, playing-wise, and just this, in my opinion, I think a lot would agree, is his best album, period. It is very ahead of its time when it comes to that of the genre of ambient music and lo-fi. It's a beautiful album. I really hope you guys enjoy it.
We're doing the second half. This is kind of why it's a sequel episode for me, of the Powers That Be from Death Grips. We heard On the Moon last time, and we're going to listen to the second half of the Powers That Be, Jenny Death. Very sonically different, more rooted in punk rock. It's awesome. It's a little better than On the Moon is definitely their most eccentric, weird release. Jenny Death is way more straightforward. The playing is something Chaz is going to have an easier time getting into for sure. I know. I'm pretty sure Jacob will love this thing.
I'll make sure to look at the lyrics this time.
Yeah, please do. Look, if you only look for three songs on GP, Inanimate Sensations, and I would say Turned Off.
But he is going to read all of the lyrics.
I will. Yes.
If he does not, there will
be
a problem.
You should be able. I break mirrors with my face in the United States. You'll have a pretty easy time understanding that one. That's a great track.
And on that note, this will conclude this edition of Unwarranted Music Opinions. I'm Jacob Lindberg here with Brian Courtney and Chaz Jenkins.
Hello.
And we'll see you again next time.
More like goodbye.